The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
In the dark, I played my dream.
Welcome to episode 407 of the Permaculture Pimpcast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is My Passion, the only Pimpcast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, practical living, and sometimes prostitutes. Oh, good to be here with y'all, and here we are. Man, got a bug in the back of my throat. Here we are on all the platforms once again, even though I told everybody we were no longer going to go ahead and put it on the Pimpcast channel, Permapastors Farm, Williams channel, all the others, because every single time we talk about something that is really, really beneficial to everybody out there, especially when it comes in terms of health, YouTube will either give us a 2-week suspension, take down the video, which, by the way, they took down another one, or they'll just... Every single time, they'll at least take 50 more subscribers. They'll just unsubscribe them, you know, every single time we do that. But we got an exception in this case because it is something that most people have no idea what's going on. But before we get into that, remember, this episode is always brought to you by the Sovereign Health Summit. We're going to be kicking that off in October. This October, coming up 27th through the 31st, and TPC will get you 5% off. Remember, we're going to have Barbara O'Neill in the his house, and we're going to have a number of others out there, too, that are going to talk about all the things. You know, all the people I brought on this show that got us canceled for a little while, yeah, all those people are going to be here in one spot, and they're going to be talking about health protocols and things that make the biggest difference in your life. So remember, October 27th through the 31st, TPC will get you 5% off. And if you can't be there live, we also have the, son, help me out here. What do you call
online
it? Live stream version. That's right. All right. Azure Standard. They are our number one sponsor out there, and they are really looking forward to that. So Azure is going to be out there, but they also cut a deal for us. Food for Health 15 will get you 15% off. And for this is only applies for new customers. Don't worry, we'll have one for everybody else out there here before too long. New customers over $100 can get 15% off. That's what I'm talking about. So before we get into it with our guest here, folks, and like I said, if you don't know, please go ahead and hit that thumbs up so they go ahead and, you know, so they know to start suppressing us immediately, especially when we have the Subversive on that I co-wrote a book with. Yeah, he's right in the middle of the damage out there in Tennessee, but he's going to give us the skinny on what's really happening out there because nobody in the mainstream prostitute media is talking about it. But before we go to him, remember, if you want some of these balling glasses that me and William are wearing right now, these blue light blockers, Bond Charge, B-O-N, not B-O-N-D, like my last name, B-O-N, Charge. You can get 15% off with promo code PERMA. Remember, protect those pearly whites from all that ugly blue light that's out there right now. And also, I'm not even looking at blue light, to be honest with y'all, because the screen is already protected. You know, everything in this room is G'd up from the feet up, so we're good to go. And then finally, Micronic Silver. And I don't mean the Chronic album from Snoop Dogg. I'm talking my Chronic Silver. It's the best silver out there. I use it all the time, especially in these times. And folks, with all this stuff they're dumping from the skies right now, a lot of folks have respiratory issues, and you can nebulize that stuff. So, yeah, go check them out. I can't get into too much of it right now because that's one of the videos they just took down. I can't even tell you what it does. How about that? And it's an element on the periodic table. So we can't even talk about that and the benefit that it might have to you. So 10% off with promo code PERMA. Now, we're going to jump right into it. I got a whole list of other advertisers here, but I'm not even going to get into it because we have a limited time with our guests coming up. Matt Hundley, who co-wrote Scrapsteading with me. And, man, it's been a long time, Matt. Glad to have you back on. How you doing, buddy?
I'm good. It's so good to talk to you. Like you said, it's been way too long.
Yeah, it has. Son, glad to see you here as well. Usually, I kind of jumped in front of you here before we're kicking off here. Hey, like I said, folks, if you're coming in right now, if you're coming in a little late, please hit that thumbs up because this is information that everybody needs to have. Now, let me just kind of set the stage here. When we had that engineered hurricane here in Western North Carolina last October, I was just telling Matt before we went live here that I have like fantastic friends that had no idea that it even happened. A month later, they were like, hey, man, I heard North Carolina got hit. I'm like, bro, you're about a month late. And they had no idea because the mainstream prostitute media isn't covering it. Now, what they are covering right now, as Matt was talking about a minute ago, is what's happening up in Minnesota. Okay. What they're talking about is maybe this armada that's heading over there to Iran. What they're talking about is everything but we the people. And I hit up Matt and I couldn't believe. I mean, when I looked at my Rolodex, man, I hit up Nicole Saws, I hit up Matt, I hit up John, I hit up everybody I know out there, another guy named Will, and a bunch of other folks that you people have never heard of before. And all of them, Matt was strangely the first one I hit up. And he gave me a detailed description of what was happening out there. And so I hit everybody else up, and they had exactly the same situation. Now, Matt, right off the bat, bro, why don't you tell everybody, because nobody's covering the devastation out there. I just talked to Dr. Will Spencer a little bit ago, and he just passed through there. He said, dude, it looks like Godzilla walked all over the place. So what's your assessment of what's going on?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's probably the most widespread natural disaster I've seen in my time living in Tennessee. I've been here about 10 years. Not an expected one. Around here, you really expect tornadoes, and they're very common. And I've seen plenty of disasters, and I've been on the damage. I've seen the damage, and, that's always amazing. But I never expected an ice storm to be. That's not really something I prepped for. I prepped for cold weather a little bit, but I never thought it through. They haven't had anything like that since 1994 in Tennessee. So before my time here, almost before my time in general. And it's not something that people were prepared for at an individual level. And it's not really something that any of the emergency services were prepared for. So essentially what you had happen was this. We were watching the weather come in, and we knew there was going to be a big storm followed by cold weather. Those of us that were watching and paying attention to the weather. But we didn't know if it was a very strange storm where we kept shifting, and they said, oh, it's going to be 8 inches of snow, which that's no big deal. We can deal with snow. And then, no, it might be ice, might be snow, might be ice. And it just kept shifting around, as the storm came closer. And when it hit, what happened is we got a little bit of snow. That first Saturday morning was just, it was fun. Typical snow. We went out, we got just 3 inches, perfect amount, did all the snow things with the kids. But that was followed up by ice, and it was anywhere from half an inch to probably up to an inch of ice in different places. And what that did was started just knocking out power lines at an unbelievable rate. Just the amount, I wish I had the numbers in front of me of how much weight that adds to a power line, mm-hmm. but it's extremely significant. And then this area of Middle Tennessee, it's almost like the Appalachians, where it's very forested. It's logging land more than agricultural land. And so the other thing that happened is all the trees froze. All of this water got inside of the trees and then froze and expanded. And then just the weight on the limbs, when you have a bunch of trees where this hasn't happened since 1994, this is a part of nature. It's way of saying, okay, it's time to do some pruning, some big pruning. So I watched, a couple of days ago, I went and visited one of my clients where he has a bunch of loblolly pines on his site. By the way, please stop planting loblolly pines, everybody. and it truly, I thought he was exaggerating, but it looked like a hurricane went through. It was that kind of damage. So picture when a tornado or a hurricane goes through a forest and when you see all these trees bent and fallen over, that's what it looks like here. It's as if a hurricane went through and knocked down that many trees. And so you have this problem where all the power was out for 97% of some of the counties around us. Hickman County had 97% of their power out. In Nashville too, a big, major, huge city, massive amounts of power out. And the problem is they can't get down these roads. 2 days ago, I drove Highway 100, which is the main, other than the interstate, that's the main road between Memphis and Nashville. So this is not a little road. This is a big road. And I thought I was going to die. And this was several days after it. It was the only people that carved out those trees were the locals escaping who had no power, water, and heat. And so that was several days after the disaster. So they can't even get to the power lines. And that's on a main road. And like I said, this is like the Appalachian. It's not as big of mountains, but it's very hilly and it's very rural, very off grid. Perry County, where I'm at, is I think one of the second poorest counties in America. And there's no building codes. It's an off grid haven. A lot of homesteaders out here. But as a result, you have all these people up and down these haulers who have no comms. They can't prioritize them, which I don't fault. It's not the electric company's fault. They're trying to restore. They're just playing the numbers game. They're trying to get power to the main areas. And then what you had following the storm was this sharp drop in temperature where it went down to 0 to 5 degrees. So no power. And then we're coming up on a week now. And in our county, we still have 1/3 of people with no power. And it's been 5 degree nights. It's been 10 degree nights, 9 degree nights, 12 degree nights. We're actually in the warmest day we've had in a while. And so it's truly a disaster because, people were unprepared. Most people were unprepared. They had no communications, cell phones went down, they can't get out. This county is very elderly. Just as a way, like a little anecdote, as a personal example, this street I live on, I bought it from a man in his 80s, and he said growing up that there was about 15 to 20 kids on this street that would all play together. Now us and one other neighbor are the only people with kids, so there's 3 kids here. This country has aged, this county has aged out. All the people went to Nashville for jobs, and so you have tons and tons of elderly people. They weren't watching YouTube, but you know, like, I don't know if it's okay to shout out somebody like Ryan Hall or one of these big YouTubers that do weather. Us millennials and us YouTube people are used to watching people like that. A lot of these older folks don't watch that. They only have mainstream, you know, cable TV. So they just had no idea what was coming. So they don't have backup heat sources. They're vulnerable. A lot of them are ill. They are, a lot of them probably got jabbed and things like that. And there's also, at the same time, there is a homesteading movement out here, and there are newborns and a lot of people with children and stuff. And so there's just a lot of vulnerable people who don't have power. And we lost somebody in the next county over in Hickman County already. I don't yet know the details if that was from cold exposure or carbon monoxide. I've been in a lot of houses where people are burning outdoor propane burners to keep warm, and you can't even tell them not to because it's like, well, do I want to die of carbon monoxide or freezing? So yeah, it's those disasters. We've had 3 houses burned down already in this county, and my county only has 8,500 people for scale there. So yeah, you know, all these heating devices that are causing fires, people left a burner on and they forgot about it. That kicks back on when the power comes on, candles falling over, things like that. So it's this perfect storm of fires, car accidents, cold exposure, carbon monoxide, people just being trapped with medical conditions. There was a lady who that I heard about secondhand who was on oxygen, and her neighbors had to evacuate her. And that's like the police, the local sheriff and emergency services, that's all they can even deal with, is really evacuating people with medical conditions and things like that. They can't help the families or the people that are just cold. So yeah, it's a disaster on a huge scale. Like I said, we still have 1/3 of people without power going on a week now.
Good night, son. Let me hit Matt with another question, then, you know, you go ahead and fire away as well. Matt, I got to know, this isn't like you have people like Weatherman Plus, and like you said, you mentioned Ryan Hall, screaming from the rooftops that this was coming. Even I got to believe it, even some of the local stations had to tell folks that this was coming.
Yeah.
What is the role of the local churches out there? I mean, we got people burning down. We got people no heat. You were telling me, I think if I read your text right, I mean, there was someone trying to heat up a meal with a candle.
Yeah.
How the local clergy been in all this?
Good and bad. So yeah, I've good and bad critiques. About one day or two, it was the night before. So a day and a half before this all rolled in, when we were all, like I said, like the coverage was pretty strong that this was coming from both local media and the YouTube ones. I was visiting a friend's church and it was like a Wednesday night service. And the pastor mentioned it. He said, we're going to determine if we have services or not. And y'all stay warm and safe. And that was it. And I was shocked and disappointed, utterly like shattered. You know, the word pastor is used a couple times in the Bible, and the translation of pastor is shepherd. And there are, in the epistles, there are very specific descriptions of the role of elders and deacons and pastors and leadership in the church. And it's not just spiritual leadership. It really talks about allocation of resources to widows and orphans and those who are vulnerable. So it's a primary responsibility of the church. And I was so disappointed to see that church and many churches like it fall through and not really pick up their God-given responsibility. In my view, what that pastor should have done is say, all right, we're not going to have the service tonight. Now that we're all here in this building on this Wednesday night, we're going to break into groups. We're going to talk about who has backup power, who doesn't, who has generators, who has heaters, who has medical conditions, who's on oxygen. Are you all prepared? Are we going to open the doors of our building? Who needs to stay here if this gets bad? Proactively, that's what they should have done. And just thinking about it more in retrospect, every church building, every institutional church should have a room full of some buddy heaters and a generator or two. Also just for individual emergencies, when one of their parishioners has a house burned down or something, coats and jackets and, just the necessities, extra food, things like that. So, but mostly, I mean, a church as a community, it's a rallying organization point. So it should have, the members all collectively do have what they need. So that is a critique that they did not do well. And a lot of churches did not open their doors as warming shelters or anything like that. My agnostic, unsaved neighbor opened his business, and that's to me a bad mark on a lot of churches, is that the people who are not a member of the church are doing what the church should be doing. So that's the negative. On the positive side, now that it's happened a few days in, churches are starting to step up. A local church just opened up an area where you can come get warm, and they're doing meals and they're running meals out to people. And so they're starting, they hadn't thought about it and they weren't prepared, but they are starting to step up now afterwards. Gabby and I and our family, we attend a little home church. And I think that's really a great model for a natural disaster, because you have everybody's phone number. And we did coordinate beforehand, not as well as we should have. But beforehand, we talked to everyone. We said, hey, everyone was aware that it was coming. But then after it happened, I found out some of the elderly members of the congregation did not have a backup heat source, and they lost power. And so we had to wait one night before we could even get out and help them. And then I had to go risk my life in my truck to go help them, which I would not have done if I had been more prepared. So I should have said, here's our extra buddy heater, or before this ever happened, we should have had, as a church, we should have had that conversation of preparedness. So after this, now we are going to have a big conversation as a group, and we're going to make sure everyone's prepared. But since it's happened, the small group, our group is maybe four or five families that meet, and some other people come and go, probably between one and two dozen people. We have had a text chain. We've been coordinating different people in the community that different people are aware of. And so this person can say, hey, I can't get to help this person. Can you go help them, and vice versa? I have a heater. This person needs it. You're going over there. And so there's been several members of the community, especially elderly folks, that we've been able to help as a church. So good and bad, but we need to do a lot more. Every church needs to be the center of their community, and they need to take on that physical provision role more than just the spiritual one.
Man. So now that it's a few days, almost a week after the disaster, has anybody regained access at this point? Like, is the ice starting to melt? Are the roads like traversable and everything like that? Everybody can get places.
Today was a big breakthrough, because we got up to 40 degrees finally, and stuff started to melt, and plows finally were able to get through. By the way, the National Guard showed up 1 hour ago.
Oh man.
Like, just a little ironic anecdote. I had to run a heater over to a couple in their 80s that had no backup heat. And from their house, I can see the National Guard Armory, and I can see all these, tracked LMTVs and LMTVs and tractor vehicles and water totes and generators just sitting behind barbed wire, not a soul in the building. But yeah, here finally a week later, they're on site. So
speaking of National Guard, has any other emergency services showed up at all? Like FEMA, have they showed up at all?
No, there's nothing federal. I haven't seen anything statewide other than some state road crews, which those guys are invaluable. What I've seen mainly in terms of who's helping is local services, local EMA. As much as I'm reluctant to speak well of any government, that local EMA is, you know, they're not sleeping. They're not with their families, and they are out there in the cold. They are helping the local sheriff, all of those type of people. They are doing everything within their power to help people, which is limited. I mean, it's a rural, poor county. They don't have budgets. They don't have funding. But they do. They've been doing a good job of just coordinating with locals. I'll also say one thing that the governor of the state, for all of my personal opinions about the state bureaucrats and politicians, and him in particular, for all of the negatives, one thing he emphasized was, go check on your neighbors. We can't deal with this. We're not ready for this. Like, they did actually emphasize that in a lot of press releases, which I thought was really good. Was sometimes government, they want to hold on to their power even when they are failing in their responsibilities. But that was a good thing, was saying, hey, we're not going to be able to do everything we can. But I've seen no state government. This National Guard that I still haven't seen any vehicles, but supposedly 1 hour ago from the time of this video, almost a week after the disaster, they are putting boots on the ground. I guess they're going to shoot the power outage. I don't know. I think they're supposed to be cutting down trees or something. I haven't seen, of course, yeah, no FEMA, nothing like that, which thank God. they have not been in the way at all. But yeah, just local resources is all I've seen. Nashville had a giant debacle where a bunch of linemen came to volunteer, like thousands from what I heard, and there was some kind of union dispute. Either they were, you know, they weren't union, and so the one group kicked them out, said, we don't want your help, which now everyone's justifiably outraged about. Just local government and the local electric utility.
Matt, I'm wondering, man, I hate to even bring it up, but I mean, it begs the question. When you have a disaster of this scale, the main difference that I know that I can see between the one that hit Western North Carolina with that hurricane in October was the fact that we had fantastic weather. Excuse me. The bluest blue skies I've ever seen since I was a kid for the next 30 days. And then even after that, we had fantastic weather. So, you know, going out there to work or to do any kind of recovery was actually quite simple. Yours is something on a whole different magnitude. And the fact that, number one, you have all of these obstructions just down the road. You sent me a video of you driving down there, and I'm like, good night. This is insane.
Yeah.
But you also add to the fact that, I mean, the weather is unseasonably cold. I mean, you know, have a couple of conversations with Dane Wigington and you'll find out, you'll start asking yourself, why is Tennessee colder than it is in Alaska right now? And nobody's asking those questions, but I digress. The one I got to ask that I don't want to ask, but I have to ask is, what do we know about fatalities so far? Because I'm not believing that right here in North Carolina, and William was boots on the ground out here when this whole thing was going on. I think they're still saying that the numbers are probably maybe 200 people that died in this thing.
286, I think, was the last number.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
286 was the last number.
Yeah, when we know thousands have actually died. And yeah, I mean, what are y'all thinking is happening out there? Because it's got to be awful.
Yeah. Confirmed, and maybe no fault to those who are counting. They just aren't getting back to the properties where you know, they're going to find the fatalities, just because those are the roads they can't go down. And, you know, like, I hate to get gory, but usually you find bodies when things smell and stuff, and that's not going to happen for a while either in those houses without power. Yesterday it was 8 was the number. Today I could be wrong on this. I think I heard 30. I did not check. I meant to check before the video. But I think I heard that number. I know the county next to us had one. I'm not aware of any yet in this county, but I suspect there will be. Just like some of the people that we've helped, like, there's a surprising number. Like, this one guy we're helping, she's 83. She's in a wheelchair. She has no family. And so there just happens to, like, the person that told me about her from our church, they they only knew her because they have a little health food store, and they only know her because she came in there and had conversations with her. So like, people are so isolated out here, and there's so many people that don't have connections. So I definitely fear for what that number will be, because people like that without intervention, yeah, they're really going to be in trouble. So yeah, I have no idea what the numbers are going to be. But yeah, somewhere it was 8 yesterday. I think it was 30 today in statewide. And then, yeah, we'll see what this number is like in after a week of this. It's going to be very strange, because probably in a few more days, the vast majority will have power, but there are pockets where they say it's going to take 2 to 4 weeks to get power to them.
Well, and the worst part about this is that we have, according to Weatherman Plus, we got another one coming in this weekend, and then there's another one after that. Mm-hmm. And he just said it all got worse. Yeah. So this is a disaster in the making. I mean, that nobody's talking about. It is an embarrassment to see what's happening in the media right now, where they're talking about everything that doesn't matter. Okay, yeah, you know, it's a pity that a guy got murdered up there in Minneapolis, but good night, man. We got a whole gang of people out there with you and around you that have no resources. They're already the forgotten kind of people, and you know, it is just absolutely dreadful. William, let me kick it on back to you.
So how widespread is the overall disaster? So we know Perry, you're in Perry County, right? We know Hickman County got hit. We know Davidson, which is Davidson for Nashville. Like, how widespread is this, and how many people are overall affected from what you understand from like no power at all?
Yeah. So I think yesterday it was like 300,000 or something, just I think in Davidson County. These numbers are just kind of what I roughly remember from social media, so there will be inaccuracies. But as far as how widespread is, this is an important prepping lesson, is a lot of areas receive the exact same weather but don't have the same problems. And the reason is geography and topography. This is a good reason to do an area study and really think these things through. I had not thought these things through. So I have one county next to me where they it's just down the road from us, and they got the same ice we did. And that whole county, they have 3 houses now without power. And they're a much larger county than us. And, you know, we saw 3,000 houses without power. The only difference is that's flat, low-lying farmland. This is hilly logging land. Trees made all the difference. It was that. So something to think about as you're pondering through your preparations for different natural disasters are, what is my geography and the things that grow here, the buildings and facilities and energy sources around here, what is that going to do? So it's widespread through this whole swath of the state, through Middle Tennessee, but county by county, it's very different, because our topography is really weird here in Tennessee. I can drive like an hour and I'm down in the Delta, and it's just flat Mississippi Delta. Totally different world down there than we're up on the Highland Rim. There's a circle of hills, almost mountains, that surround Nashville, which is a big valley and basin in the bottom. So Nashville has their own climate. We've got our own climate, our own problems. And then the area surrounding us, there's all these flatter areas around us, and then it becomes the Appalachian Mountains. But it's very widespread. Hundreds of thousands of people have been without power. I don't know what the number is today, but it's probably still in the, if our ratio is representative, then it's going to probably be like a third of a lot of these counties. And I have seen stories coming out of Nashville where, you know, they have, same here, they have a lot of vulnerable populations up there, and it's not quite as bad, because if you can walk out, you can get to a store from anywhere in the city, I'm sure, where there's going to be supplies. But in a way, they're in those cities, like this elderly lady I mentioned, we went and found her, but we found, you know, footsteps going up to her door because her neighbors did go check on her. I doubt that's happening to the same degree in cities. People in these rural areas know they have to check on their neighbors, because everyone out here knows that we are it, that there is no emergency services in a lot of cases. And in the city, people don't have that expectation, but probably in Nashville, they're just as overwhelmed there. Like, this is the South. We're not prepared for cold weather events like this.
Yeah. I spoke to a number of people that actually live in Nashville, and they were without power. And one of them, yeah, I probably shouldn't say their names, but they're pretty well known, especially in the social media space. And they were saying, man, it is a complete mess. Like 50% of the people didn't have any power. And in this kind of weather, and like you said, in the country, man, like you said, we're the last line of defense. There is no, we don't have a net, you know, with the government, you know, surrounding us. So, you know, it's kind of up to you, mm-hmm. Matt, You know, before I get back into it, I want to know that are there any efforts going on, or is there someplace folks can donate to where, I mean, I know we're going to donate. I mean, what can we, where can we send our money for anybody that's out there listening to this? We'll make sure this thing goes up tonight for all those that may be so inclined. But, you know, we had help falling over itself. I mean, we had too much help to a certain point here in Western North Carolina. But you guys are getting zero coverage from what I can tell, man. Where can people go to help? Because I know that, you know, there's, like you said, it's one of the poorest counties in the country. So what can we do to help?
So we chatted with our nonprofit board yesterday for Back to the Land. That's the nonprofit we set up for running the festival. But it also does other things like putting food gardens and church and school properties and just helping with food solutions, essentially. So we talked to the board and we set up a Venmo yesterday for that. And so from there, we can disperse it to several different organizations. So we set up a Venmo that's just under at Back to the Land. And so from there, some of the places we're going to send it, and we've been using that account. We already had some funds left over from the festival. So we've been using that to buy food, propane, gas. In one case, we got some just like little books and stuff for some kids that were stuck in a trailer. You know, they've been probably raised on TV their whole life and they're having withdrawals. And then we're going to be donating some to that warming shelter I mentioned that that they're they opened up at a building here. And then we're just going to see where the needs are. And so any funding we have from that, we're just going to get out as fast as we can. Our goal right now will be to, oh, and another thing we'll probably help with is some of the people that lost everything in fires. So our goal is going to be any money that comes in to get out as fast as we can, because in a week, this won't be it won't be quite like Helene where it's still a problem afterwards. This is basically, I mean, I'm overly generalizing, but we're going to try to get it's like today, tomorrow are the crucial days. We have three more days of bitter cold. So getting fuel, especially to people, is going to be our main thing right now.
Yeah. So looking back at it, because hindsight is 2020, how, and also an ice storm isn't something that most of us prepare for down south. It's not usually something that, you know, we deal with every year. How would you have prepared differently with yourself, like you and your family, and then your mutual assistance group? How would you guys have prepared differently for an ice storm?
So many lessons. So, and I did things right and wrong, and we did things right and wrong. So backup heat sources. We had natural, so other than our electric HVAC, we had natural gas in this house. We don't have a wood stove anymore, which I miss, and we want to get one back in, but we didn't make it happen this year. But I also had buddy heaters. So I had three sources, and that was a win, because I didn't need my third source, but other people did. And that was life-saving. So three backup heat sources at least. Many people had wood stoves, but from watching social media, did not have wood because they use other systems, but they still had the wood stove in the house. They didn't have wood, or it wasn't covered up, so it got soaking wet. So if you have a wood stove and you aren't using it regularly, still be burning wood. So heat sources, you can't have too many heat sources. So big lesson there, have heat sources and have them for your neighbors and your elderly population. You do have to prep for other people. As preppers, we like to talk about, well, they should be ready. And that's true. But that it's in the end, you're going to change your mind when you realize that it is your 90-year-old neighbor that doesn't have a heat source. And it is our responsibility as like, as men who are, in our community, you know, we are supposed to lead the way. So prep for other people, get heat sources. Communications, big, big, big one. I know you guys learned a lot in Helene with that. And I said it out loud at that time, and I said communications, and I didn't do it. I'm going to show my shame here. This is a GMRS radio here that I don't know how to use, and I'm not connected to the repeater, and it's still in the box. I bought it. I have it. I own it. Owning something is not preparedness. It did me absolutely no good when our cell phones went down. And there is a network out here. I just didn't take, you know, life is busy. We're running a business. We're living life. But that I needed to set aside a half a day to figure that out. So, and the same thing applies. I've seen a lot of points of failure with people's generators. They had a generator. They thought they were prepared and they went out. They left gas in it over the winter or something like that. Just wouldn't start. They weren't prepared. So they had the machine, but they didn't have the preparation. I had two buddy heaters. One worked, one didn't. When I went to fire it up, it didn't work. So checking gear regularly, maybe just put it on your calendar, put it on a calendar and say twice a year, I'm going to pull out my stuff. I'm going to check my comms. I'm going to check my generator. I'm going to check my heaters, whatever machinery, especially that you have, and food stocks, things like that. So communications is a big one. Another one is I want to make sure next time I have a little, like little handheld ham radios or some, even just walkie talkies, because in this kind of disaster, you might only be going half a mile away or a mile away. You could give them to neighbors. Like I chatted with several neighbors right before it hit. I could have given them a walkie talkie and had, comms. And another one is just being connected to people in your surrounding county in different areas, even just with internet or email or things like that, because I was in a life and death situation driving down a highway to help somebody because I thought the highway was fine because a different section of that highway, somebody else told me was fine. I needed intel. Intel is so important in this kind of situation. And I needed a network to call up and say, hey, how's the road look outside your front door? That could have been the difference between life and death. So whatever your mutual assistance group is, whether that's your church or a neighborhood or whatever, you want geographical proximity. You want people to close, but you need people in your intelligence network who are in other parts of your area as well. In any scenario, whether that was some kind of warfare or some kind of natural disaster or flooding or something, knowing roads is so important and knowing what's happening in different areas and things like that and power. And they can say, hey, I do see utility trucks or I do see the Cold War Russian troops coming down my road, whatever the scenario is. So comms, super important. Networks, super important. The networks that thrived were, we had a Telegram group, funny enough, a Telegram group called Christian Women's Group for Perry County or something like that, that my wife is on. That was critical for just finding out who was vulnerable and who needed help. Facebook groups for like, I mean, that's the scent, like, I don't like Facebook, but it is the beast that exists for communication with a lot of the community. And that's where people are posting their needs and saying, and that's also where our local hardware store is saying, hey, we finally got our propane truck in. So you can't have, like, even if you don't like the social media, having just a dummy account where you can go access this and like your local community groups, your concerned citizens of whatever county or what's happening, Perry County, whatever that your group name is, beyond those community groups, that's huge. And then, yeah, forming your own networks, especially churches should have a communication network. They should have ham radios or something that doesn't rely on the cell phone towers. Cell phones did go down for a day or two and they're still spotty. So yeah, comms, check your equipment. We did pretty well on food and we don't have giant pantries full of food, but you know, we just have a typical homesteader pantry. So we were fine on food. We pre-cooked food before this and that was huge because we were cooking on a little propane burner and I had to go outside to do it so we didn't get carbon monoxide and it was bitterly cold while I was cooking. So the ability to just warm something up was huge. Prep more for neighbors. We're running some up to a gal who she's a gal in her wheelchair and she can't operate a stove in a good day. And so prep up more for others, have means of carrying hot food around. That's a very important. But yeah, we were okay on food. Water, big point of failure for a lot of people. Water went down. So a lot of people had, they got this boil water notice and they say there's bacteria in the tap water. And at the same time, they don't have electricity and they don't have any heat and they have no means of boiling water. So they're literally having to drink unsafe water. They can't heat snow. They have to drink what comes out of the tap. A lot of people's water froze. A lot of people's wells, of course, went down when the power went down. So I checked a store today and just kind of to do a check of, okay, what's gone in an emergency and water. There wasn't even a bottle of water on the shelves. So whatever water source you have, it's just like heat sources. You need more water sources. You can have a well and you can even have solar panels. A lot of solar panels got covered in ice. A lot of systems broke down, just electronic components broke down, things ice got in stuff and froze and people that thought they were prepared weren't. So I've often been a little bit, too proud in saying like, oh, I don't need to do the prepper thing of having cases of water and jugs of water. I've got a well, I've got a spring. Well, good luck getting to the spring under ice that thick. And if the well's down and the tap water's down, you still need some jugs of water. And that actually the jugs we did have were critical when we got the boil water notice just for convenience, just to be able to wash dishes without having to boil water for every dish. We have toddlers, we generate a lot of dishes. One or two more things, good prep is disposable dishes. I don't like you eating off of plastic and paper normally and things like that. But boy, when you can't do dishes and we can't access any trash services or anything like that, paper plates and plastic cutlery and things like that, my goodness, those little convenience matters more than you think in a disaster. It's a morale issue and it's a time issue. Having some of these things that we did right allows us to have the time to go help other people because we're not dealing with our own crises. So I think those are the main ones. And then before a natural disaster hits that you see coming, don't assume that everyone in your group or community knows. I just assumed. And I thought I was the people who are very intelligent that I know. Like I know people who they've been through communist revolutions in third world countries. And they're older people who are they're business owners, like people who are very smart. I really thought they would be prepared. They were utterly unprepared and had nothing. So don't presume that your community or your family is prepared. It's way easier to help them a few days before and say, hey, you got to go get this. You got to go get a generator or propane while you still can.
Matt, how much of what's going on right now do you think, excuse me, is a function of, I guess the only thing I could say is apathy, because you know what, that storm that you guys had, it could have easily hit us. And what I did notice is that right after the hurricane, right after the hurricane here, everybody was like, oh, freaking out. And then the second the power went back on, they went right back into the matrix. And they did absolutely positively nothing. Mm-hmm. I really got a couple of questions here. Maybe I'll break it down in two parts. Number one, you were talking about leveraging social media like Facebook and some of the other things, but there was so much disinformation going on around here. There were people actually getting off on putting out bad information, and it probably killed some people. I mean, seriously, there are people that actually get off on putting out bad information. That's number one. And number two, I wonder how much or do you have any thoughts about how much apathy may have played into this? Because before, you know, this thing could have gone, we were having predictions, apocalyptic predictions of ice around these areas where I live. And then when I went to the grocery store to go pick up, I think it was a bag of potatoes for Michelle, I'm looking at everybody's cart in there. And the things that they were prepping with blew my mind. Mm-hmm. All I saw was soda, cigarettes, and toilet paper.
They prep like they live.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, man, maybe you want to get some stable items here. You know, I understand not everybody's going to take this, or they don't live to the extent that we do, or have, you know, a giant pantry of freeze-dried stuff just in case something like this happens. But I'm wondering, was disinformation a problem in some of the recovery efforts, and also apathy? What roles do you think that plays in?
I would say apathy more than disinformation. There wasn't a tremendous amount of disinformation in this case. I think something about the different nature of this versus the other one. It's a smaller area and a smaller community that I saw. There was disinformation in the sense that I saw people prior to it being on social media groups saying, you guys are all overreacting. This is, you know, they always say it's going to be like this, and you're making fun of people who are prepping. So that's, I guess, more apathy than disinformation. But that was a problem, because I think it did make some people feel silly, and it's like, yeah, no, you should be going out and buying bread and milk. Like, yeah, panic, go. So there was that element. I haven't seen this people saying, hey, this road is open, this road is closed, or this terrible thing is happening. I did see that secondhand in Helena. So I know what you're talking about. I did not see that so much during this. Doesn't mean it didn't happen. It probably happened more in Nashville and places like that. But definitely apathy is a big problem, because like you said, it's like as soon as it's gone, they're going to go right back in. Like, I'm kind of wanting a new generator now, and I know for a fact that in 7 days from now, I can go on Facebook Marketplace or Craigslist, and I'll get some really cheap brand new generators. It'll be like, you know, buying treadmills 3 months after January, after everyone's made their resolution.
There you go.
They buy them and they get rid of them and get pennies on, you know, they were selling them for a $500 generator was selling for $1,000 a few days ago. That's going to be selling for $250 now. Because yeah, they will immediately forget. Most people will forget the lessons learned, which is very, very sad. But, yeah, they're just, there's still, even after some people, there will be some changed minds, I think. But what I have seen in other instances is people are so comfortable in that matrix. It's a safe, comfortable bubble. And they're quick to forget the trauma of the natural disaster. They don't, it's an unpleasant memory. And so I think it's a broader problem. People, instead of dealing with problems and trauma in their life, they go to whatever their addiction or their escapism is. And so they're just going to go to that, and yeah, they're going to forget. And so that is why you do what you can. You alert people, you, especially church groups, places where you can talk and have a say, in family groups, you advocate for it. you tell, I think one thing we want to work on is passing out how to's, you know, here's how to prep. Here's like, you don't need to go overboard. Just go buy cans, just cans of beans. Go get one buddy heater, things like that. Just making things really easy for people. Because yeah, apathy is going to be a problem. There's only so much you can do. And so that is why you just have to prepare for your community. You have to prepare for those around you. Because that's a reality of our system. That's not going to change for a while. It's going to take a lot more breakdown. You know, it's like probably in Ukraine, people were apathetic still for the first few weeks and going to the first few months. And finally, a lot of people in this first world, formerly a first world country, are realizing, oh, this is it, it's hitting the fan, and life's not normal anymore.
So since you are a permaculture consultant and everything, mm-hmm. are there any adjustments that you would make to the design for your specific homestead or clients' homesteads now that this whole ice storm has happened and with the possibility of this becoming more frequent in that part of Tennessee? Are there any adjustments you would make to your design or clients' designs?
That's a great question. I'll answer a little now, but that's one I'm going to ponder over more. So one that I already expressed to people is tree proximity to houses. My goodness, just spend the money now, even if you think you don't have it. Because a lot of the problem is somebody buys a house and there's a towering loblolly pine over their house. And because it's so close to the house, they have to spend $2,000 to get it cut down. You can get your local meth head to do it for $500 and he'll drop it on your house. It's expensive to cut down those big trees, but boy, it's a lot more expensive when you're in a natural disaster and it does drop on your house and it goes through your house, and that's a lot more expensive. So tree proximity to houses, a problem in tornadoes. It's a problem in this. I physically saw trees on houses as I've been driving around. My neighbor's house almost got hit. And they're just a lot of chicken coops, I have a bunch hanging over my barn, and it is a situation where it's like, it's a very old barn. It's like, okay, the barn is worth less than the money I will spend taking those trees down. The tools in it are not. So it is something I have to consider. But so yeah, number one, trees in proximity to houses. I like trees. I do plant trees close to my house, but I plant, you know, semi-dwarf apple trees and pear trees and shrubby trees and figs and things that are not going to be overhanging it. So do not let trees overhang your house. There's an old trick. You can step back and you view a tree. Then you put your arm next to it, and the base of the tree should be at your elbow. The top of the tree is at the top of your hand, and then you just make your hand fall towards the house. That's a way to kind of loosely measure: is my house going to get hit by this tree? So that's number one. As far as kind of like agricultural things, the one thing I want to do is definitely make sure my greenhouse is more up armored. I had to bring a lot of trees into the house. Gabby gets a gold star for being a tolerant wife, being a roommate with hundreds of plants. But there's a lot of labor and critical labor, you know, it's like in the run up to that freeze, I had to spend a lot of time getting trees in the house. So better heating systems for my greenhouse or passive heating systems, really planning for that. Here's a very big one: fences. One of my clients is an ongoing client I work for. We're doing a native forest restoration project, and it's the one I mentioned that had a lot of loblolly pines on it, because we did a savanna cut where we cleared most of them, but we left some up to try to kind of be the grandfather trees, to have something old, not just completely clear cut it. And then we built this high tensile fence along it. And so it just dropped trees all over the fence, all over this brand new fence. By the way, high tensile is great because most of it's going to bounce back and recover. But I love trees and pasture. I'm a civil pasture guy. I love trees everywhere. I have struggled to cut down trees, but think about fence lines, because even in normal weather, normal times, when you have a big fence and you're a farmer, you're going to spend a lot of time cutting trees off of fence lines. So starting to maybe rethink where to place trees in conjunction with fences, smaller trees, maybe more the pollarded and coppiced trees, stuff that's not going to take out a fence like that. That's huge. And also, like in that context, we have some cattle on site and they all survived, but there was trees. It was dropping like a tornado. So having spots where I think they did have the sense to go stand in the clear spots. So if you're doing silver pasture, maybe dedicate a little bit of area to just being a blank regular pasture, just to where they could, where they're not going to get hit by something. So that's some big ones. Wind breaks are helpful. Think about your heating systems and your HVACs and things like that. As far as, there's a lot of things you can do with plants to allow light in or to block light, to block wind. That's very specific to every situation, but I'll definitely be thinking more about this extreme situation as I plan things like that. And I'm sure I'll think of a dozen more and I'll be irritated that I didn't think of them right now. But yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy how that sort of thing happens, that you have all these wonderful ideas right after this thing happens, even though you think you may have done all the things on the front end. But, you know, hey, just to kind of change gears here for a minute, Ken and Amy are bringing up something that was a really, really big deal out here. And the question is, how have folks done with no digital currency? No power equals no credit cards. Now, the reason I'm asking is, good night. I mean, I always have cash on hand no matter what. And it blew my mind that in the town I live in, and you've been here, Matt. I mean, in the town I live in, there must have been 100 deep going to the one ATM that still had power on it.
Yeah.
Which was bizarre to me because I was thinking, okay, what, man, does nobody ever carry cash? And then I realized there must be a relic because I guess most people do business with a credit card. But that is a really, really solid question, because around here, if you didn't have cash, you weren't getting anything done.
Yeah.
So yeah, maybe you can address that. So how have folks done with no digital currency? You know, they can't run cards, so no power equals no credit cards.
Yeah. So there was definitely an element of that, places where you could only do cash. However, the nature of this situation is most of the places didn't open until they had power. So it wasn't as big of an issue as it could have been. It was actually one of my primary concerns. And I did beforehand, I went to the bank and made sure I had cash on hand. Which, by the way, if you're prepping for that, make sure you have ones and fives too, because if you're in an emergency situation, all you need is a case of water, but all you have is $100 bill. Guess what? You're paying $100 for a case of water. So have small bills would be a takeaway. But actually, on the inverse side, there is a case for making sure you do, even if you're a totally cash person or something, you should actually have a debit or a credit card, even if it's prepaid, because a lot of gas stations were, people couldn't get to work, but the outside pumps were still working. So in that case, you had to have a card to access the gas. So it's just like communications. Like, I don't like social media, but have it. You know, you want to really have as many options as possible. So have both cash and have the digital currency access as well. So that way in both situations, because if you only had cash, you would not have been able to get gas in that situation. But yeah, very few people have cash. I see that with our business here in our nursery, and we really try to encourage it. We try to push cash for more reasons than one, obviously, but that's a hard one. It's just like they're intentionally moving people away from cash, and you can see where in a natural disaster, there are, especially in these rural areas, there are a lot of small businesses that will open without power, and they could be handing out heaters, and they can be handing out things like that. And if you have cash, you have access, and if you don't, you don't. So that should be one of your preps. You should just have a drawer full of cash.
Man, slightly different topic. Are you guys going to be doing Back to the Land Festival this year, or are you guys done doing it, or how's it going with that?
Yeah, I think we're going to leave it on hiatus for now. One thing that's happened is, like, when we started it, it was an amazing thing that happened right in the middle of the 2020, 2021, when everything, basically the idea was, oh, they're shutting everything down. Let's gather together when they say not to. But people like us doing that, as you saw, a lot of similar festivals started to pop up and conferences, and we got to be involved with a lot of people and give them our things we'd learned and that. So that gap has kind of been filled locally. And even though we loved it, it was an amazing life-changing thing for us and so good for our community. I still get to talk to people who say, yeah, I have sheep now because of Back to Land. I have a garden now because of Back to Land. For now, it looks like that need is filled. We have a really cool organization in our county where it's called Ag and Arts, where different than a homesteading festival, but like all the farms are open in the county. You can go visit all the different ones. And then there's like a monthly homesteader meetup that's really good. And there's classes and education. So for now, locally, we had to decide, do we want to grow more or do we want to focus our energies elsewhere? So just for now, it seemed like the mission is being accomplished there. And we wanted to turn our attention elsewhere, kind of like more small community gardens and places, education, getting people educated on more like a less overwhelming level where we can do classes all year instead of all at once. Because one thing we did is we formed it as a nonprofit rather than a business. And so we had the funding and everything for it. But I think going forward, something like that scale, you want to run it a little bit more like a business to where you can delegate more. Because what happened with us is we just had to decide where do we spend our energies. And it did come to, we were really neglecting our own homestead to do Back to the Land. And so we decided we need to be a good example before we can, you know, we need to physician heal thyself. And then also the nursery to us is a massive part of our mission. And so we decided to focus more energies there, because with the nursery, I think to date we've probably put, I would have to venture to say around 5,000 trees in people's yard that bear food. And that's more than I've ever done through all the nonprofit. It's like, and I'm making a living doing that, but like, you know, 5,000 trees, and you think about the pounds of food that they'll be producing eventually. That's, you know, maybe 50 to 100,000 pounds of food annually in people's yards. That's a lot more than I can do in any other method. So the time may come back around. But at least for right now, for the moment, we're on pause.
Matt, once again, man, you hit it out of the park. Man, we can't, and it's been so long since I talked to you, man. It's just a joy to hear your voice and, you know, doing what I knew you and Gabby would do. You know, I'm not shocked that she's out there. I still can't get over her carrying in all that sheetrock when you guys were building that place. Mm-hmm. And Gabby all by herself, I was like, no way, man. She put all this sheetrock in here. I mean, that girl's as hard as woodpecker lips, man. So no, man, you guys are quite the duo there. Once again, Matt, if anybody wants to look at any of your content or, you know, wants to reach out to you, maybe for a consultation out there, maybe they need some help. Maybe they want to spend their money with you. How do they go about doing that? And once again, if they want to donate, where do they send it?
Mm-hmm. So, donation wise, Venmo at Back to the Land. So at Back to the Land, we were able to get that URL. And then you could also do things the old fashioned way, and you could send us a check. Trying to think about the best way to do that. Just reach out to me via email and I'll work that out. My email is mattwcountry@gmail.com. And you can also use that email to reach out about anything, about consultations or anything like that. Our website for our homestead design is TennesseeHomesteadDesign.com. And that's also got all my contact info there if you had any questions about anything. Those are probably the two best ways. Here on YouTube, I have not been faithfully updating the YouTube channel, but it's Homestead for a Living. You can look for that. But yeah, if you just feel free to reach out. Email is usually the best way. I can answer that quicker. We'll be spending a lot of time on the West Coast this year. I just have some family over there and some things. And so if you're in Oregon or Washington, I can also do consultations there a lot as well.
All right, man. Well, folks, I mean, as you just found out here, there's a whole lot in the media that's going on with this whole storm out there that nobody's talking about. And you're just not going to find a lot of this information in the mainstream. So this is exactly why we had to bring on, you know, Matt to find out what is actually happening, boots on the ground. And basically what we're finding out is exactly what he said here is exactly corroborated by some of the other people that I know in this area. So it's a mess out there. It is. And if you can afford to donate anything at all, please do. All right, y'all. It was a joy to have Matt back on. Go check out our book, Scrapsteading, y'all. Till next time, stay alert.
Stay alive.
Now it's rain with roots that run deep. Wisdom from sawing, burn across the dream. Let the idea unfold. I'm grooving with the truth, truth, truth. Feeling that just groove, groove, groove. We've got the answers. All we need to do. Listen to the earth, they got us. Watch the world spin from the smallest sprout to harmony begin in the cycle of life where the magic's aligned to the good.